Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Community Geek Podcast. This is Greg Russo, your host, here also with Darren.
Hey, Greg, how's it going today, all right?
Good, and I have apparently been mispronouncing Darren's name for 3-4 months now.
I'm too much of a nice guy to correct you, but I had to in the end.
All right, so set the record straight real quick.
So it's Darren Goff. It's pronounced with a strong F as opposed to, I think, possibly go or go, as you were interpreting it.
So it's G-O-U-G-H, like Vincent Van Gogh, maybe. Like, that's where I was going with it.
I don't know where the origin of the name comes from. It feels vaguely Eastern European to me, but that's the way the family have been pronouncing it, so that's what we're going to stick with.
All right, so Darren Goff, and I apologize. The mispronunciation was coming from a good place.
It's all good. We're still friends.
All right, so I want to get into a little site news our first thing, kick it off. We had a couple big releases recently, mainly two that I want to focus on. We also had some metric stuff on the back end, but I don't want to bore you with that. The cool stuff. If you go to the website now, you will see on the right-hand corner the Twitter stream. It's a neat little widget that our IT guy Adam added. You click it, it expands out, and you can see a list of all Community Geek users, like all their Twitter. It's right there for you. You can follow, you can retweet, you can reply, you can subscribe to the list, all that good stuff. And, you're tired of watching Twitter? Click the bird again, swoosh, goes right back into your scroll bar. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen to do with social media.
Although, see, now I'm thinking we should have had that sound effect put on there.
The swooshing?
Yeah, I'm thinking that would have been a sort of a selling feature as well, but hey, we didn't think about that. But I like your interpretation of it. It was nice.
Yeah, I would say it would be a value add, but, gotta prioritize, I guess. Can't have everything I want. the other cool thing we have is the discussion button. This was on the site briefly. Some of our older members will remember this, and it was great. While it was on there, a lot of people were using it, but unfortunately, it was interacting with our subscription system, like the stuff that sends you email notifications, in a way that we weren't really happy with. So we took it down for a while, we reworked it, and it's back out live now. Basically, you go to a news story. At the bottom of the news story, you'll see a Start the Discussion button. Click that. Takes you to a forum post. You can do the title, do the content, and you can start a discussion thread about that news article. Now, the cool part. The next person, after you've done that, the next person that goes to that same article, they'll see reply to discussion instead of start discussion. They click that, they get taken to the thread that you created. It's very cool and very hacky. Like, it's really awkwardly done, but it's awesome. Adam and prior to that, Alex just did a great job figuring out how to make that happen for us. It's definitely not out of the box.
Yeah, it looks nice. It works nicely now as well. And I think it will just be that a little connection between the two things that make commenting and sharing ideas so much easier. And as you say, Greg, the implementation now is really cool. So, yeah, some great new bits and pieces coming out on the site.
Also, a cool thing for the admin side, for people that are maybe able to do this on their own. I figured out this morning that I don't have to wait for someone to make a thread. I can take, as long as I know the node number, I can take another forum thread and make it the thread for that particular news piece. So, for instance, we had a thread about Sprint, which is our upcoming event we'll talk about in a few minutes, where people could reply that they were going, get their discount code, that kind of stuff. And I also put out an announcement, but the post went up beforehand because it was sort of like a sneak preview for Community Geek members. Before the actual site was live, I didn't really have anything to point to for a news article, so I waited till I actually had that. Now I can take the thread that was already created, as long as I know the node number, which it did, and put it into the new article as the direct, and now people will already see the reply to discussion, and they'll get taken to the pre-existing thread, which already has like 15 replies. So why make two threads when you can have one? That's neat.
I like this. This is like something from the not-too-distant future. And you get that right now on Community Geek. That's how progressive we are. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And we've had a lot of signups in anticipation of Sprint. I want to give some shout-outs to our new members, Tony Reeves, Joe Cathrell of Lithium. Very cool dude. We've been talking a lot on email. He's really nice. Chicagoland area. Might be seeing him next month. We'll see. Melissa Jenkins. And, oh my gosh, I hope I pronounced this correctly, Megan. If I don't, please forgive. Megan Lundy?
Your track record so far, as we open the show, is great in this area. So, yeah. That sounds right to me, but let's hope so.
That's atrocious. I think at this point, no one expects me to get it right. So
right.
I feel like I'm not letting anyone down.
Yeah, exactly. You're consistent. That's the key.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of our new members are going to Sprint, and we mentioned on the show, you're probably going to want to know what it is. If you haven't heard about it, it's FeverBee's brand new event. We just announced it. Darren, why don't you take us through what Sprint is, what it's going to be bringing to people, and why they should come.
Absolutely. So FeverBee ran an event in the UK this year called VerCon in April. Some of the guys listening to this podcast may well have attended, and if you did, thanks very much for coming. And obviously, Rich does a huge amount of speaking around the world, and I've attended quite a lot of these things. And we talked about the next stage of events for us and what we wanted to move the industry forward with. And the kind of key things that come out of these events and the things when we talk to people about them is that although people find a lot of the information fantastic to listen to, occasionally it can come across as a little bit universal, maybe a little bit generic. And one thing we were really keen on was to give people talks and tips and kind of practical advice and actions that they could take as soon as the event finished right into their community. As a return on investment for their managers and the C-suite, absolutely. But things that were really specific and really interesting, and things that they knew they could take that and go and do it the next day. And this is where Sprint's come about, really. It's a great event. It's in San Francisco. It's the 29th and the 30th of October this year. And we're quite fortunate that we've managed to get the Terra Gallery to host this in, which is a pretty cool space. And we're really happy about that. So the acronym SPRINT is Share Practical, Relevant Ideas and New Tactics. So it's really specific into what we're trying to achieve here. The first day is going to be an intensive workshop with us lot of FeverBee and a few friends. And day two will be the more traditional conference side of things. All dedicated to one thing, the sharing the practical actions from the top speakers, so you can absolutely increase activity in your community. But for me, Greg, and you've seen this as well, the speaker list is absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah.
We're hugely fortunate that FeverBee are well known and Rich is well connected, but he's really pulled out the stops for this one. So without wishing to sound too like a sales piece, I'll just very quickly flick through the speakers we've got. Because it's really important that people understand how weighty this list is. Although I'm thinking maybe with pronunciation. Actually, no, I'm going to hand this over to you, Greg, to read this list.
Nope.
Right, so hopefully I'll get Richard Millington correct. He's obviously going to be speaking, which is a must, but absolutely awesome. Then we've got Laurie Droud, I think it's pronounced, who's the head of communities at Google AdWords. Jeff Atwood, who most of you guys will know, obviously now on the Discourse project. Philippe Verdet is the Director of Community at Wikipedia. Katie Kobe, Director of Communities at OpenTable. Justin Isaf, goes without saying who he is if you're anyone in the community space. Rachel Happ, the founder at Community Roundtable. Alison Lay, Community Manager at Fitbit. Douglas Atkin, head of community at Airbnb. I mean, these are just some great names and some great companies as well. We've got John Baku, who's the founder at FetLife, which is going to be a pretty interesting talk. If you guys don't know what that is, go check it out. Diane Kibbe, who's the global head of community at Premier Farnell. And this is the one that I'm kind of interested in, Rob Ludlow. They run a site called Backyard Chickens. And we've said on our website, if you haven't seen it, check it out, but absolutely go and do it. The first time Rich told me about it, I headed over there for a bit of a scoot around, and it's so unbelievably addictive. And I've also since discovered that my wife, this is something she's never told me before, actually wants to have chickens in our backyard.
No way.
So I was kind of talking to her last week over a glass of wine about this, you know, about the great event, all this great stuff we're doing, and mentioned this. And this was the revelation that came out. So now something that I kind of thought, this is quite cool, passing interest, has now become what looks like somewhere I'm going to spend a fair bit of time on trying to figure out how this stuff works. So yeah, that's created me a little bit of work and possibly some cost, but very cool as well, right?
Yeah, the Rod Ludlow thing is fun because I checked out backyard chickens and my next door neighbors actually have chickens in their backyard. And I read the sign and I was like, I wonder if this is how that whole thing started. Like, I'm tempted to go knock on the door and be like, do you know backyard chickens, like the site online, and wait till they like look at me very strangely or go, yeah, with their eyes all wide, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's they've got those... like, I don't know, it must be at least half a dozen back there. I hear them all the time, clucking and stuff.
That's one of those conversations you're only going to have once with someone, I think.
Right. It goes one of two ways.
Exactly, right? But yeah, but to go back to the speakers, you know, these guys have been drilled specifically that, you know, to really understand what this event's about, to make sure that all their talks are very direct and specific and follow the Sprint ethos. And we're just so excited to be doing this. You know, it's a cool place, cool speaker list. There's gonna be a few surprises along the way. Really cool.
I got a question. So
sure,
a lot of these speakers, they're awesome. They've also been speaking other places. So say you've seen Jeff Atwood this year. Would it be fair to say that the direction of his talk is going to be different and more unique at this event than any other because of our focus?
I'd say so. So that's a really good point. I mean, obviously, I can't speak for Jeff or any other speakers specifically, but whenever we've reached out to these guys to see if they and girls to see if they want to come and speak at our event, we've been really specific in what the event's about and really specific about how we think this event differentiates from other events you may have been to. So, you know, if you've got a couple of events to go to, if you've been to a few this year, or you still got a couple of go to as well, this event will be unlike anything you've been to before. And we're really keen that the speakers differentiate their talks from other things they may have done, which may have been absolutely appropriate at the time. This is going to be really specific stuff that you can take from them and go and plug into your communities and make a difference from the day after you leave the event. And that's where we feel this event has huge value. And you're going to get this mix of speakers all doing that one thing at the same time. And for me, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the 29th to the 30th in San Francisco. You're going to go to sprint.feverbee.com. Obviously, the link will be in the show notes. Definitely check it out. And if you're a Community Geek member, a subscriber, there is a massive 50% discount, and you are free to sign up first if you are not yet a Community Geek member. I don't know how we're staying in business with this kind of deal, but there it is. Yeah, I don't question that side of the business.
No, but for us, that's so important. You know, our Community Geek website is going fantastically at the moment, but we really want to show people that, you know, to be part of the Feverbee Community Geek ecosystem, you know, you're really important to us. So yeah, absolutely, if you want that discount, get on the Community Geek train right now. You know, it's worth the subscription in its own right, but it also gets you this fantastic discount on the event. So, you know, if you guys are serious about community, this is an opportunity you don't want to miss.
Speaking of events, though, we have another story that's a little more on the whimsical side, I guess. I think it's funny if you're not involved in it, but if you were involved in it, it's probably really traumatic.
That's fair.
There's a event called DashCon. It was a Tumblr convention, not an official company-sponsored event, more of like a for-fans, by-fans type deal. The organizers had never done an event before. The community had never really had an event before, at least not an official, like, full-time, this whole weekend is nothing but Tumblr kind of thing. It didn't go well, to say the least. There were massive problems with funding. There was a massive dust-up, I guess you would say, with the hotel. And the stories differ between rumors, official statements, and the hotel's official way that they would deal with conventions, like their policies. So there's a lot of misinformation running around. There's a lot of stuff that's not clear. There's a lot of possibly excuse-making. Who really knows kind of thing. The issue was that they ran out of money, like really ran out of money. So much so that they had to have donation drives at the event itself to have enough money to stay in the convention. They also had despite getting that, and by getting that, I mean literally passing around a money sack and asking people to put money into the sack, they still did not have enough to pay all of the people that were going to be speaking and, you know, performing events. In particular, Welcome to Night Vale, which they managed to book for this thing. And if you're not familiar with it, Welcome to Night Vale is the number one podcast in America right now. And it's fantastic. It's a community radio style science fiction horror comedy show. I love it. It's great. It's huge right now, incredibly popular. They managed to get them to do a live performance. And prior to the live performance, they had a Q&A session. There were some problems with money in the Q&A session, so Welcome to Night Vale was like, hey, we would like the money for the live performance first, so this isn't an issue. That didn't happen. Welcome to Night Vale is canceled. If you had bought tickets to Welcome to Night Vale, you were given, quote, an extra hour in the ball pit.
Amazing.
There was a small inflatable pool, maybe 10 feet, probably more like 8, with plastic balls in it, in the middle of like an otherwise empty room. And there will be a picture of it. I believe this. There will be a picture of it because it has to be seen to be believed. And allegedly, the convention organizers said that no one on the convention staff had seen the product that was delivered, and it was supposed to be like something that was actually impressive. But what showed up was like this little rinky-dink thing, and they're like, "Oh, we'll give you an extra hour that you can be there. Like that's a reward of some kind." And there were just issues with they couldn't pay for guests' hotel rooms and. Everything was a huge mess. There were no records kept, so refunds were nearly impossible to get. And it wound up being a huge fiasco. The organizers made all kinds of public apologies. They fired a couple people. And believe it or not, they have planned another one for next year.
The story's incredible. I mean, as you're talking through that, Greg, you know, and I've read bits and pieces about this, but the more you talk about it, the more it seems like it never, well, obviously the event didn't happen, but this whole thing just didn't happen. It's just, if you were going to write a story about how not to do an event, this would be it, right? You know, it's just incredible. And the thing that got me was so people have spent, you know, good money. I forget what the ticket price was to get in there, but they were saying that, you know, they were basically walking around with a big bag and asking for cash donations from attendees, which in the end, they reckon they got to almost $12,000. So this is just people, you know, who've just walked in with a couple of $100 in their wallet. They're just throwing money into a big sack. Now, you know, as an event attendee, even if you hadn't noticed that things were starting to crash around you, would you not find that a bit strange that some sort of random person just walks up to you and, you know, with a big sack, possibly with swag or, you know, something written on the outside and just says, hey, we're a bit short, throw some money in this sack. It's just incredible. And I was reading the quote by Megan Eli, the DashCon owner, in the official statement, and it says, and I'm sorry, I'm laughing, it's not, you know, for the people that attended, it wasn't funny, but it says only about $7,000 was money still due on the revenue itself, as $10,000 was for at event services in quotation marks, such as electricity. And I just find, you know, electricity to be something that wasn't either budgeted for or taken into consideration is just an incredible situation to be in. And the ball pool thing just tops all. And I will say to the people listening to the show, you will be pleased to know that when we put the sprint event together, Rich has decreed that all the ball pools we will have the sprint event have to be a minimum of 20 foot because we don't feel like you're getting value out of your ticket otherwise. And there is a quota of 5,000 balls per square meter. So, you know, on that side, don't be worried at all.
Quality assured.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, you will get the full ball pool experience at sprint. You can take that to the bank. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I believe the total raised in emergency donations between the live event, and they also had, I think they posted on Tumblr for some kind of emergency donation drive through a PayPal-type service. The total was about $17,000.
Wow.
I don't know. I've never planned, like, an event or a convention to the extent where I would, like, rent a hotel and, you know, I have to budget all these different things. I have run smaller scale events. And there are always some unexpected costs. You have to account for that a little bit. But like you said, Darren, some of these things seemed incredibly basic. Like, if you were on the hook for electricity, budget for electricity. A lot of these things, I mean, hotels have these type events at them all the time. They have very standard policies and standard contracts. You probably should have taken a bit more care into reading that and maybe incorporated what you were, in fact, responsible for paying for into your budget.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also they said that their expectation of event attendees was somewhere around 5,000. And I think in reality, it was sort of somewhere between 500 and 1,000, if that. That's a hell of a shortfall to make up, you know, especially if you're budgeting a per ticket sale for this sort of thing. But I just, you know, it's like you say, Greg, it's just the basics that just seem so overlooked. And I don't know, I just think, you know, when you're going for that amount of people, that's a big event to put on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to have people that absolutely know what they're doing, because you know, the chance of it going wrong is, well, as illustrated, is pretty high. It's incredible. I still find it incredible.
Yeah, and speaking of knowing what was going wrong, there seemed to be a high degree of miscommunication amongst the staff. There's a lot of this person put a statement out without checking with anyone above them. There was services and products being delivered, like the ball pit, which were never checked on by anyone at all, because, I mean, obviously the first person to look at it would have known there was an issue. So they just, like, accepted the delivery for this thing. Did it set itself up? Did the person that set it up think that was what was supposed to be happening? Like, it seemed like there wasn't a lot of... Obviously, the leadership seemed like, what the hell is this ball pit thing we keep hearing about? Because they didn't know what was going on. But really, you should have communicated what was at least expected to the people that were going to be on the front lines of it a little bit and have them be able to talk to you back. As far as the attendees list, let's try to close this out with some practical advice we could give our audience here. How do you predict the event turnout? Like you said, they had expected 5,000, they got 500. How do you realistically go about figuring out how many people are likely to show up to your event and plan for it in that way? Obviously, you don't want to have it be too small and leave money on the table, but clearly there are risks for it expecting it to be too large and then falling short of the mark.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to start with, you know, you have to know who your competitors are and what they've been doing in a similar space, and maybe that's how they started. But, you know, you already have your audience there. They're the people that are going to come to your events. So, you know, ask them, you know, send surveys out, ask people what they want from an event, how likely they'd be to come. And I think, you know, when you're running an event like this and it's, you know, it's perhaps your first one or you don't have a huge amount of experience, you know, personally, I think it's better to run something smaller and tighter and make it much more of a success and oversubscribe, you know, have to turn people away and we're really sorry, but this has been so popular and next year we'll make it bigger and better. It just seems like an incredible number. Just to sort of pull out of thin air with what seems to be not very much research and working out from their audience how many people were going to get there.
Yeah, fair point. And how many people can get into Sprint?
How many people? So
our spot list?
Well, I think we're aiming for about 250. There's a bit of contingency in there because the interest already has been quite high. So I think it'd be less an issue of actually getting to that number, more about looking at what the contingency is over that. But, you know, we did talk about going bigger straight off, but I think for us, what we want to ensure is that we run a really, you know, the best event we can possibly put on. Mm-hmm. And everyone walks out of there with the experience they expect from FeverB and absolutely walk away going, you know what, that was fantastic. We want that feel to come away from the event. So yeah, that's where we got to. And, you know, we did a lot of work originally with surveys and we spoke to the people that we work with and the people that follow us and, you know, love what we do. So, you know, our research was a really big thing into understanding our event and understanding how big it would be and what we put on and what people wanted to see. So yeah, it's for me, it's, you know, the proof of the pudding is always about the work you do up front and understanding exactly what it is you're doing before you start. This one feels to me like it's been pulled out of the air a lot, but I guess you never quite know what goes on behind closed doors, right? Or small ball pits in this case.
Mm. Well, I wish them the best of luck next year. And certainly a lot of eyes are going to be on that convention to see if it's going to be a repeat. I do not envy the people that have to put this con on again next year, because it's going to have a lot to prove, I think. But moving on to something else Tumblr related. Oh, go ahead, Darren.
No, I was just going to agree with you, Greg. I'd like, you know, we should finish this by saying that, you know, we don't like to see this happen. You know, it's, some of the bits were quite comical, but reading through the bits and pieces, I do get a sense that, you know, this did just spiral out of control, and they are pretty apologetic about it. So hopefully if they can, you know, hopefully the reputation can be built on again, and if they want to do it again next year, they can run something that's a success. And, you know, we obviously wish them well with that.
Speaking of things that are Tumblr related, there was a story that came out a couple weeks back, and I had wanted to write for it for Community Geek, but everyone was covering the event itself. I wanted to get more of the community perspective on it, but I had a hard time tracking down anyone in Tumblr's community management team. I tried several avenues and nothing worked. They just completely didn't want to discuss it. So it never really got written about, but I do think it's worth talking about here on the show, at least in general terms. There was an incident where 4chan and Tumblr invaded one another. For those who are not familiar, Tumblr is very much considered a safe space social media site for people of all groups, minorities, transgendered, multigendered, you name it, it's on there, and it's treated with great respect. 4chan is the least respectful community, I think, in the entire internet. There is nothing safe. In fact, they will go to great lengths to outshock and one-up one another in the most irreverent, graphic, offensive possible way. So, these are two diametrically opposed communities, right? One half of 4chan, not one half, but one subsection of 4chan decided to play a prank on another section of 4chan and created this Photoshop image of a propaganda poster about, hey, this is such a hive of racism and misogyny. We're Tumblr and we're going to go take it down. And had like the Tumblr letterhead and all. It looked like it came from Tumblr, but it was in fact created by one of the subboards on 4chan. So predictably they took the bait and the results were hilarious. But prior to them taking the bait, and this was like the invasion of Tumblr was supposed to be on the 4th of July, apparently some Tumblr people were actually following the forum, found the picture and thought it was real, and actually did stage a brief invasion of the 4chan forums. It lasted, I think, like an hour or something like that, which did not work out for them very well, because Tumblr, or excuse me, 4chan was like, oh, we're not going to stand for this. Let's completely wreck Tumblr. So they went into Tumblr and they took over their hashtag system, which is sort of like their content sorting and discovery feature, and they filled things with like hashtag feminism and hashtag Sherlock, hashtag Doctor Who, with gay porn, violent gory images, pictures of cats, just stuff that's completely inappropriate for that particular hashtag, with such volume that Tumblr freaked out. The users could not keep track of themselves. And we're just like, everyone, just stop using your accounts. Stop using these hashtags. We're going to try to use these tags over here. There's like several dozen warning posts like, oh my gosh, if you are offended by blankety blank, don't click this particular hashtag because they're putting all this stuff in it. And that went on for days on end. It may still in some places be going on for all I know. I wouldn't be surprised. But this entire incident, it made me think more about the role of the other in the online community. The other is sort of the social construct, goes way back to the tribal roots of humanity, where I've got my tribe and there's this other tribe, and they're different. They're not us. There's something that's not us about them. And usually that other is used as a way to help define your community. There's something about that tribe that you're not. We're freer than they are, or you know, we do it like this, and their way is wrong. It's usually a way to make your own tribe feel better. This is done all the time. And in the online community space, it's a little different because we don't so much have, like, a lot of the same divisions as real life. Like, nationality isn't as much of a thing, race isn't as much of a thing, because for all you know, the thing is anonymous or someone's under a different identity. It's a little different. But I do find it interesting that online communities themselves, between one another, exhibit this behavior. It happens all the time in gaming, for instance. You have your group, and there's always the rival group, or the enemy group, or the guys that you absolutely hate because they're like the complete opposite of everything your group stands for. And I think you see that also with a lot of online communities in the forum space as well. Not just 4chan and Tumblr, but they're a good example because it just kind of happened, and they are sort of two extreme ends of a same spectrum. And you even see, like, as things got on with this incident, people would make fan art of, like, the personified Tumblr and Anonymous sort of making out with one another, or they're just hanging out, or they're having relationship fights, sort of making the fun of the fact that they're two sides of the same coin. Darren, have you observed this behavior in any of your communities where you... either through no initiative of your own, just your members seem to identify a rival group or an opposite number that they contrast themselves with?
Yeah, I was thinking as you were saying that, actually. So in a previous life, I was the community manager for Money Saving Expert, which will probably mean more to people listening to this in the UK than it will in the States. But as a community in a forum, it's quite diverse. So you'd think maybe you'd expect under the term money for there to be a lot of discrepancy in terms of the board titles and the forum areas. But one thing we really noticed was like the difference between what people would call sort of old style money saving. So the sort of, you know, make do amends. And it can quite often be generational as well. And then people that were much more, I guess, like risk takers. So there was a board or a forum on there called Match Betting. They worked out a whole system how to play the bookies to make sort of small amounts of money, but over time it could become quite profitable. And absolutely, these communities developed their own sort of tribal instincts. And there was very much a sense that when people walked onto a certain board, you know, if they were known to be from another area, they'd be called on it. And we had a very successful competitions forum. I mean, it's called Comping in the UK, it's really popular. But, you know, those guys, it was almost like a closed community. You know, we didn't make it like that. We certainly encouraged other people from other communities to go in there, and especially new people to go in there. But if people were seen to, and this is where it becomes interesting for me, if people were seen to take actions or processes that weren't approved by the group, quite often they'd be called on it. Now, these weren't rules or governance that we set out as people that ran and moderated the forum. These were intrinsic things that had been built by the community to either achieve certain tasks or certain ways they wanted to speak, or quite often they would perhaps have a parlance or a way of talking or abbreviating. Now, if that's developed over time, so quite often it was, you know, years in the making. If people came in from the outside and didn't pick up these signals, they would quite often be ostracized from the group. And that's what I find most incredible about these kind of, especially an internal, when it's on an internal platform and you have diversity across the kind of vertical channels of the things that people talk about under one community banner. It's really fascinating. But the other thing I was going to mention is we did a lot of work with Mumsnet and also in the UK, a car forum called Pistonheads. And I know Paul that ran Pistonheads and Justine fairly well. And they actually originally, they came together because they actually had a falling out with each other. Now, on one side, you've got a mum's parenting website. On the other side, you've got a sort of a petrol heads, you know, very, very, I would say, male orientated. You know, their demographic was very male, sort of car ownership forum. And you think the two would never meet in real life. And I, for the life of me, I can't remember the particular incident that connected the two. I don't know whether someone came across from one forum to the other. But they ended up with exactly the situation you were talking about with Tumblr and 4chan, where they would go on like raiding parties on each other's communities, just with a view of sort of like, this is mums that have been here and done this, and Pistonheads have been here and done this. But the thing that happened, which was fascinating, was it started off quite angrily, a lot of animosity, but they're now actually two closely aligned communities, because over time it became something that it lost the anger, it actually became something that connected them. the fact that it was quite fun for people that weren't them to come onto their community and have a point of view, or to, you know, be seen to sort of deliberately stir up conversation or debate, or maybe poke fun at the stereotypes, you know, to poke fun at the male, you know, petrol head or whatever. And I found that interesting, that it actually, it, over time, it became the opposite of what you usually find with these sort of things, that the diversity act was actually the making of a connection between the two communities. And I found that fascinating, Greg.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it brings a good segue into a point that I sort of wanted to close this out with. When you usually talk about the other in a social sciences context, it's overwhelmingly negative, right? You're talking about the underlying psychological motivations of some horrible things like racism and nationalism. But it can be useful in a lot of ways. I would point to like the Olympics, for instance. Very much a sense of, oh, my tribe, none of these other tribes. Oh, there's all kinds of country trash talking. Or the World Cup is another great one. I was the lone American in the channel full of Brits. But it was great to have that banter back and forth. Even though we were focusing on our separate identities that were not connected, they were involved in something that did bring us a connection. And like you said, these two diametrically opposed communities, as they interact, they do find a common ground, and I think what they form is a shared history. Sometimes that's not great. In a lot of real-life situations, there's lots of like wars that sort of dominate these shared histories. But that's not always the case. And I think in the online community space, there's more room for that because the stakes are a little lower. And these communities can get to know one another and form these touchstones that they can go back on. And sometimes, and this happens in gaming a lot. And this is a very fascinating thing that I've found, especially in EVE Online, where you've got these, big social groups constantly vying over limited resources. You've got these like bitter enemies. You hate these guys. You've been fighting them for months and months and months. But some larger third group comes into your area, all of a sudden you're friends with the guys that you've been scraping with tooth and nail because you don't want these outsiders coming. And what just happened was the other got transferred from these enemies that you've been having to this third party because you've actually developed more in common with your enemy than this strange group that you don't know anything about, that you don't really feel belongs there. There's the sense of belonging, even in an adversarial context. These other guys, they have a role in your area, in your gameplay experience. This other group is out of place. It's none of their business. And we're going to band together, join forces to force these guys out, and then we can go back to our usual dynamic.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, sport's a great example of that. You know, in the UK, you know, the football leagues, they spend 9 months of the year baiting each other and taunting each other and all that. As soon as a World Cup or a national event comes around, you know, we're all suddenly united under the banner of our national country, right, and our national flag. And, you know, if you look through the history of these sort of things in terms of tribes, you know, we were two or three huts and that was our tribe. And then, we were a street and that was our tribe. And then we're a town, then we're a country, then we're, you know, a continent. It's the whole thing about the others is always a fascinating thing. I think, you know, if you actually stop to ask people exactly who the others are, a lot of the time it's quite hard for them to sort of define what that is. It's just something they kind of intrinsically feel, possibly, or they have more in common with a certain group than another, and that's kind of how they define it.
And it's an important thing for our listeners to keep in mind is this is a natural and inevitable thing. I haven't really observed it with Community Geek yet. I don't think we've found our other quite yet, but I'm sure that we will with like 100% certainty. Even though the community space is really friendly and there's a lot of interconnection going on, like we're friends with CMX and we're friends with all these other groups, I still feel like it's going to happen. It always happens. If it's not someone in the community space, it'll be the community space versus something else. Like, oh, here's a good one. And I got this vibe from Rich and a few other people. It's the community managers versus the social media managers. That distinction brings up a lot of these same reactions, these same visceral things like, no, I'm not a social media manager. I am a community manager. It's different. This is my group over here. This is a separate group. Sometimes we do things that they do, but that's a different thing over there, and I don't want to be identified like that. That dynamic definitely runs through our community.
Yeah, I think that's probably spot on the money, actually.
So it's not something to fight. Even if there are negative parts about it where it gets nasty, you can do things about that. You can moderate to make sure it clean, or excuse me, to make it clear that interaction has to be civil and that sort of thing. But don't ever think that you can fight this definition of the other. It will always happen. As long as there have been two people on the planet, there has been another. And when it was three, there was two people versus the one person. It's just human nature. It's basic psychology. Embrace it. Try to find the positive aspects about it. Look to sporting events, World Cup, Olympics. Look to gaming. Look for shared histories. Try to keep things as positive as possible. It's not always going to be able to happen. Like, I don't think Tumblr is all of a sudden going to turn around and empathize with 4chan in any way. But at the same time, like, there are a lot of examples where that can happen, and maybe in the future you need those communities for something and you have a relationship to sort of build off of. If you're rivals with a community, you probably know who the big members of that community are, and maybe there's opportunity to work together on a shared interest or something like that. You can build off that. It's an inevitable thing, but you can use it for good. And I think that's the ultimate message that I'd like to get across in this discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you do come to the Sprint Feverbee event, we're all friends there. I really want to make that clear. You know, we would love to see you there. We're all on the... But you know what, Greg? As you were just saying that, the one thing that came into my head, I don't know, I assume you're a Simpsons fan like most of us are, but it was, you know, Maggie has that kind of rivalry with the baby with the big eyebrows.
Yes.
Yes.
I've no idea why that came into my head. It probably says more about my mental state than anything else. But in terms of like really basic level rivalry, that you don't know why it's a rivalry, but it kind of is. That's all I could think about. So, hey, I'm going to leave it there for today.
All right. Excellent note to end on. Thank you guys for joining us for this episode of the Community Geek Podcast. I have been Greg Russo. This is Darren Goff. Yeah?
Correct.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you for joining us, and I hope to see you on Community Geek soon. Bye, guys.